Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, well, we had to make a bit of an adjustment. So originally, this was going to be a two-part podcast featuring Ricky O'Donnell at the top talking about the Bulls and then Dieter Kurtenbach talking about TV ratings and the NBA and the NBA's business model and a lot of different things that Dieter and I are really interested in. Unfortunately, I recorded the first part of the podcast with Ricky earlier on Tuesday and had a bit of an issue with the audio on my end. That'll still get released. It's just going to come later in the week. But the part that I recorded with Dieter ended up being like an hour and a half anyway, so I'm just going to release this for you guys here and now, and then release the part with Ricky O'Donnell later in the week. So before we get there, though, I do just want to shout out our sponsors over at BetOnline. Look, football season's in full swing. You guys know that I like to gamble on football. I also like to gamble on NCAA basketball. And I'm on a pretty hot streak right now. I think I'm up like four and a half units so far this year. And I'm really excited that college basketball is back in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners at betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit to start betting on college football, professional football, college basketball, and my case specifically, every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bets, parlays, teasers, whatever you're looking for, go to betonline.ag. You're going to get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners at betonline.ag. Head on over to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use that promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. That's CLNS50 over at betonline.ag. So yeah, this podcast is just going to be Dieter and I riffing about NBA ratings and business models. And then at the end, we talk a bunch about movies that we've seen recently and some of the stuff that I've liked this year. I kind of give a little bit of a rundown on what my five favorite movies are of the 84 now that I've seen this year. So the next voices you'll hear will be Dieter and I talking about the NBA, its ratings, its business model, and where the league goes from here. All right, as mentioned at the top, Dieter Kurtenbach is here. We are going to talk about the NBA and whether or not it should care about the fact that TNT ratings are down right now. It's worth noting that, as far as I know, it's only the TNT ratings. I looked into it a little bit today, just in terms of stuff that has been public. ESPN's ratings are pretty stagnant, and ESPN's ratings are stagnant. TNT's are the ones that are down. You and I have talked about ratings before, and for people who have not listened to those podcasts before, I would implore you to do so. The reason that I find it as fascinating as I do is, like, I worked at Nielsen for, like, a year. right. and worked in their custom research department. And I can't like get into specifics on stuff that I did, but you know, a lot of stuff was working for clients who are ostensibly TV channels and they wanted to know viewership trends. Right.
And you killed a guy. I mean, other than that.
Yeah, other than that. And shifting viewership trends, right? Right. And like how people consume this stuff. So it's something I've always been intensely interested in. I, you know, who knows? I could still be working there if I didn't end up getting a job in basketball. Dieter is just interested because why?
Because it's existential to the league itself. I mean, I don't prescribe to the... I don't suspend disbelief that this isn't an entertainment product that is made for television. And so when ratings are down, that means that, in my opinion, the league is down because the league is essentially a TV show.
So, yeah, I disagree with that premise wholeheartedly. So just from where this, I believe this article came from Sports Media Watch, basically saying that TNT averaged a 0.6 rating and 909,000 viewers for Mavericks Knicks, and a 0.49 rating and 776,000 for Nets Nuggets on Thursday, marking the network's sixth straight NBA games with fewer than a million viewers, including ESPN. Nine games have failed to crack the million viewer mark thus far, compared to 12 all of last season. So, why are the alarm bells up for you? I guess I will
I'll first present a caveat. Like, I do believe that the NFL's ratings monolith and their improved Thursday Night Football product is directly affecting TNT's ratings.
Totally agree. And I will also say that, like, given the fact that it's TNT, given the fact that you can just like kind of, you know, have matchups that look better at ESPN. Like, I think ESPN has had a lot of the LA games so far, and like the LA games have been pretty good ratings wise. You know, you can look at matchup based stuff on this small of a sample and say like, oh, I guess TNT just, you know, had to have Nets Nuggets, right? And that's just not going to draw like a crazy amount.
100%. And let's also establish that ESPN has a hype machine built into it. So you don't have to change the channel to get both the hype and the content in and of itself, which is, I think, huge. You have to make it an appointment to go to TNT. Now, obviously, the guides and such, the way that we consume television or whatever the hell television is in this day and age, makes it a lot easier. But you have to make a conscious decision to change the channel from ESPN to TNT in order to watch the game. And I do think that that creates some sort of a barrier to what percentage. I couldn't say. It might be minuscule. It might be massive. But my general stance on all of this is that I'm not that surprised. It is probably being overhyped. I would agree with you in that sense. To the degree in which it's overhyped, I think we're going to disagree. I think that the league has a legitimate existential issue here. By the time that they come up for new negotiations with ESPN and Turner, yes, the money will go up, but by the percentage, but not by a percentage that I think that they're going to be all that happy with, because ultimately this product is not delivering for the national broadcast TV partners. There is some indication that local TV broadcast partners aren't too thrilled with the NBA product these days as well. And I think that that, you know, clearly shows.
I disagree with that for what it's worth.
When you're good, it's going to be up. The issue is what happens with mediocre and bad teams. And I think that the data shows that you're not getting the same sort of market saturation that you used to in terms of ratings, maybe not eyeballs, but ratings percentage. With those mediocre and lower level teams.
So where I disagree on any of the, like, I do not think that the product of the NBA itself has anything to do with ratings. Now, we can talk about the fact that I believe that ratings very clearly are going down, and there is a discussion to be had about how detrimental this is to the league. I think that it is detrimental insofar as I am sure the NBA would be very happy to keep the status quo of ESPN and TNT paying them hundreds of millions of dollars to $1 billion every year to keep their rights on their network.
Yes.
Having said that, ultimately the way this works is that TNT has to be able to make the money back they expend on every game by advertising the game on their channel. Like, they need to be able to sell ads, you know, on Thursday nights particularly. Ads tend to be for cars, for movies that are coming out on Friday.
It's the typical 25 to 54 year old male programming commercials, and it's why, you know, sports talk radio, despite the demise of terrestrial radio, is still a viable industry. That market group buys more than anything else. In particular, they buy big money items, and they basically, what you were saying, trucks.
They tend to buy them on the weekends as well, is why. Like, right. For Thursdays particularly, which is what we're essentially talking about here, because again, mm-hmm. ESPNs aren't really down. For Thursdays particularly, they have to, TNT has to be able to go to Bud Light, go to Ford, go to whatever company is marketing your latest Warner Brothers movie, because a lot of the you know, companies mm-hmm. out here tend to have consultancies do the marketing for them. Mm-hmm. Have to be able to go to those people and say, hey, we want more money from you, despite the fact that our ratings are going down. And there's a way to do that. You can sell the scarcity of being able to find 750,000 people that are willing to watch any singular thing at once, right. That are not on a streaming platform that does not sell
watching
ads,
anything,
theoretically.
Watching anything live these days is a scarcity in and of itself.
It is. So I'm not going to sit here and say that the world is falling even if ratings are down, because I don't
Correct.
Think that it does, because I still think that the leverage that these networks hold is still incredibly high.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Now, where we get into a question of how much this matters is, generally it just comes down to the status quo and how much the NBA wants to keep it, right?
Right.
On some level, part of me is very interested in the ideal, and I talked about this with my buddy Jack Appleby on Twitter. I think it's Juicebox CA. And like, we talked about the idea of the NBA essentially starting a Netflix for the NBA. And basically what would have to happen is your amount of money coming in from subscriptions would have to pass the amount of money that you're getting from these digital rights plus advertising that you can still sell in addition to the digital rights along the curve of monetary funds. Right now, I don't think that we're at a stage where that is doable.
Well, Sam, let me interrupt you real fast.
I'm intrigued in that idea long term. Before we get to what you're going to say, so continue.
It's a new revenue. No, I'm going to engage on that point because I think it's interesting. It's a new revenue stream that you can, in theory, make up the difference, whatever the delta might be between expected revenue and actual revenue coming in. Because I think this is maybe the key point. You mentioned it with status quo. Okay, what is the status quo for the NBA? Are they cool with a 10% boost in ratings, or have they gotten
a 10% boost
things?
In ratings, or a 10% boost
in
digital
money coming in?
Yeah,
no, well, I'm talking about in broadcast television rights. When that comes up in 2024 or 2025, one or the other, are they going to be cool with not getting the percentage that I think that they expect? I think that they expect that every TV deal from here on out, or at least they should probably be thinking about this if they want to, you know, be good at business, is that the same jump that they had a few years back, right? That one that brought them up to $9 billion for the TV deal, that kind of jump should be expected in every new negotiation. And I just don't know if they can pull that off. I don't know if that expectation, I'll be fair, I don't know if that expectation exists. And if it doesn't, maybe you need to get somebody else in charge of the NBA, because that should be the goal, especially when the NFL's kicking ass in getting more and more money from networks every single year. But coming in and saying, okay, well, we didn't get what we wanted from Turner and ESPN or whomever else is bidding in the next go around, but we're going to turn League Pass into Netflix. Like, they already have League Pass. They're already getting $300 from everybody, or $250. And it's a shitty product, to be fair. Like, they haven't really put the time.
Yeah,
and
I think
into
that's
it.
A big issue with all of it. They really need to invest some cash. Honestly, they should just pay like BAMTech or whatever to fix the product.
100%. But even then, like, you're dealing with $250, no local. I mean, now you're just tranching it.
I think that for what it's worth, I think they would bump up the price.
Probably. And then somehow get the local affiliates on board. I mean, you'd have to bump it up big time.
Yeah. The local affiliates do cause issues here, I think.
This is my overall point. I just don't think that the NBA's revenue is going to increase the way that it had before, given the current scenario out there. Yes, it will go up because there is a scarcity, but I don't think the scarcity makes up for the decline in ratings and their interest being sort of ported over to the big giant ocean of the internet, which cannot produce revenue for the league in a way that the classic terrestrial media can.
So I think that there are two points of that, first and foremost. So the big question that I have here is, I think that there is another option potentially in regard to fixing the streaming issue. I wonder if you just sell streaming rights exclusively to like Amazon.
For the entirety of the league?
Yes.
So they would essentially write you a whole check. You wash your hands of it. You don't have to worry about any of that. And they'll overpay for it as part of their overarching loss leader mentality.
Yeah. The idea being like, oh, if we get you into Amazon, you'll probably buy goods or something like that.
Well, there's like three companies in the world who do that.
Amazon's one of them.
Amazon is one of them. You could argue that Google is another.
But realistically, all you need to do is...
And AT&T and DirecTV would be a third, and they might be getting out of that ballgame because they've had exclusivity on Sunday Ticket, and that has brought a lot of people over to DirecTV as a loss leader for them, I might add, or at least a break-even leader. And now they're not even sure if they want to keep doing that.
Yeah, so I think that what the idea there would be is, even if you're not going to get the percentage increase of whatever you're going to have distribution rights sold to ESPN and TNT, because I'm still saying that as far as terrestrial TV, or I guess it's not terrestrial anymore, but you know what I mean.
Classic cable in whatever means you get.
Maybe you don't get that percentage, but essentially you're creating a new revenue stream via selling these exclusive streaming rights in the United States to Amazon. You can keep Tencent over in China. You can keep whatever the partners are in India, in Japan, etc.
Well, they better hope those partners in India and Japan start ponying up a little bit more money.
Sure. But I think the way you can sell it is that
undercut ESPN and TNT? Why are they going to now give you the money that you're looking for? You just sold a big chunk of the product, if not the entire product, from out underneath them.
I don't think that that's true because
how this would work.
Because essentially, the reason that people have cable is just, you know, for a wide breadth of options to watch on TV, right? Whereas with streaming, you have a large number of options within your streaming, but it's limited. Theoretically, cable is unlimited. Its streaming is more targeted in the way that it hits people's interests, right?
It's algorithmic.
Yes. So with this, you're essentially, I don't know that it changes the game for ESPN because Amazon is still going to charge over the top to be able to do these streaming rights. So I don't know that it changes much mathematically for an ESPN or a TNT.
And I guess you can make the argument that the NFL has been doing this co-broadcasting scenario where they have been putting games on Big Fox and also streaming them on Amazon. And it hasn't been an issue for Fox because they want it. They need to have it. They gots to get it. And so they'll pay whatever the hell the NFL wants, because otherwise CBS or ESPN is going to get Thursday Night Football and they just can't have that because they sell a shit ton of money against it. But then the argument is people are tuning into that and people just aren't tuning in for NBA regular season basketball the way they were.
And I think that that's where I disagree with you in terms. Okay. I guess that the way that they were is probably fair insofar as I think that they're doing it differently than they used to. But I think that there's probably more people than ever watching the NBA.
And yet they're not, that's not translated. And like, that's great. I mean, that's really good. And the NBA can tout that all we want. And we can, you know, piggyback on that clout until the cows come home. The TNT has to sell ads. ESPN has to sell ads. If they're not coming to ESPN and TNT, then they're not able to sell ads, or at least they're not able to get as much money as they want for those ads. And now TNT and ESPN have to come to Jesus and say, is it worth it for us to have this product on our air and to pay what the NBA wants us to pay? That is the fundamental issue, because as much as the NBA might love the fact that they own the internet, and they do, as much as the NFL is the dominant sport in America, the NBA seems to own all of the extracurricular stuff out there. The NBA is talked about as much as the NFL these days, anecdotally. So that's fantastic. But what the hell does it mean if you can't monetize that? And the people who are going to monetize it in the most significant way are still the classic terrestrial, the classic cable providers, the classic TV stations. They're the ones handing out billions. Otherwise, right. You're just hoping that you can make it up in what, YouTube? Like we did this on Twitter today. Like I've pulled, you know, a quarter of a million YouTube viewers before for NBA coverage. Doesn't make a shit. Like
right.
It doesn't change my life. You know?
Nonetheless. This is why I do think that it is more of a monetization issue than a consumption issue, right?
Well, I think that those two things are directly aligned, honestly, because
I don't think they are.
Okay, I'd like to hear the separation point, I suppose.
The reason that I don't think that they are is because at some point someone is going to figure out how to monetize the internet.
Oh, they've only been saying that for 25 years. I work for a fucking newspaper, Sam. You know that that's not happening.
No, it hasn't happened yet. Okay. At some point, it's going to happen.
We will do this away from people, but I would love to have that conversation. Not that I'm saying you're wrong. I just need to hear every thought that you have on that, because whoever monetizes it is the richest person on the planet.
Right. So I don't have an answer to it, first and foremost.
Well, damn it. Got me all excited and hot and bothered.
Having said that, I do think that one avenue that content creators have figured out is that owning their own content and streaming it digitally and putting in a subscription fee to view it has been the most successful so far, right? Netflix obviously licenses in content. Disney Plus creates his own content, right? I think that that's where I come in with the idea of the NBA potentially looking at putting all of its content under like the streaming loop and making people pay $5 a month for it.
Just saying, fuck it.
Yeah.
Just saying,
long term,
ESPN, we don't need TNT. We're going to own our own shit.
Yeah. Long term, I bet
the owners are going to have a big issue with that.
Right. No, they will. They would never go for this. Long term, I think that is the most viable option. Short term, the NBA owners won't go for it because the status quo is so exceptionally profitable.
Oh my God. We're talking about billions of dollars here. And what you're saying there is basically, what if we just do hundreds of millions? I mean,
think it would be hundreds of millions. I think it would genuinely be billions.
If the NBA just decided we're tearing up the contract and next year we are going to,
cost them money. It would cost them probably $1 billion next year. I think that is true.
That's
why it won't happen.
How many years would it take for that to be viable?
I don't have
the
answer to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would take a decade
for
that to be the viable
option.
It
genuinely could.
And then by then it'd be dead.
I don't think it'd be dead. But I do think
it'd be super niche, man. I mean, there'd be something at some point people still watch ESPN, you know, like at some point there is a promotional aspect to this that matters. I mean, I think all the time about, remember NASCAR? Like that was a thing. Like there was a moment, like there were a lot.
NASCAR did have a moment.
NASCAR had a moment. Why did NASCAR have a moment? Well, because ESPN bought its rights and even
white folks.
No, I know, but like NASCAR is no longer having a moment. No one watches it, and there are still a shit ton of white folks out there. We haven't all died yet. Like,
fair point.
Like, what changed? It stopped getting promoted. It's on NBCSN now. Okay, like credit to all the people at NBC and stuff. Like, I like plenty of them, but like Jesus Christ, that's a niche channel. It's not on every single. They don't, let me put it this way. They don't put it on motel marquees saying we have
NASCAR.
You know, NBCSN.
That'd be amazing.
Like
so, somewhere like North Carolina on a hotel marquee going, we have NASCAR.
But it will say we have HBO and ESPN, you know, because those letters mean something to people. I don't know what people, but some people. Like those are prestige brand names. That is the number one name. It might not be the number one revenue name, but that is the number one name in like premium adult, not porn, but like adult, you know, adult contemporary entertainment in
HBO.
Hotel
marquee is also, we'll throw that on the marquee as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of porn channels. And ESPN, which is synonymous with sports, despite the fact that it starts with E. So in that, like NASCAR was getting huge ratings. It was being talked about as like, this is becoming a juggernaut. It's because ESPN was pounding it on SportsCenter. And this was not that long ago. Yeah. And then ESPN basically, and listen, we talk, oh, SportsCenter doesn't matter. A lot of people watch SportsCenter, not as many as before, but, you know, no one watches anything as much as before. But then ESPN dropped NASCAR. They decided that NASCAR got too big for its britches. They didn't want to pay what NASCAR wanted. NBC did. And now they're pulling like 150,000 viewers. I mean, it's just, it's laughable. They don't even put it on terrestrial TV anymore. It died off because, and this is the Dan Le Batard line, like, the four letters can make you or break you. And everyone thinks, oh, I'll go somewhere else. There's one guy who's pulled it off. There's one guy who's pulled it off that's done really well, and Dan Patrick. Everyone else, it's like the worldwide leader still runs the world. So the NBA, as much as it might make sense, and I agree with you on principle, like, yeah, you know, take it, own your own shit. You know, don't let the man bring you down. Like, I think that ESPN wants the NBA. Doesn't need it, but it wants it. It needs the NFL. But the NBA needs ESPN, too. And
I think you're right for what it's worth.
Now, the TNT conversation is a little different.
I think you're right for what it's worth. You could not really do this and have it be profitable long term.
It is a good idea, though. I'll give you credit for that. Like, I'm all in on like the principle of the matter. Like,
having
your shit.
Having said that, what they need to do is they need to find a way to advertise YouTube on YouTube videos, not just the money that you make from YouTube via their monetization model. Mm-hmm. I'm talking,
yeah, that's not going to do shit. Yeah. You need to sell on top of it.
On top of it. What you do is, so
Sam, I'm going to cut you off here. I'm sorry. I hate to do this, but maybe they shouldn't have let anyone upload whatever they wanted with NBA content for a decade, and they wouldn't have such a problem here.
But for what it's worth, I'm not sure it matters. I will say that. Because,
man, have you looked at what the free Dawkins like videos will do compared to the NBA videos?
Sure, but if you really want, like, and I'm not advocating the NBA shut down free Dawkins.
Neither am I. What I'm saying is, what I'm saying is, they let everyone else own their shit for a long time, and we are all extremely thankful for it. And now, if they're trying to figure out how they can get that back, it ain't happening. That was Napster, baby. Like, it's just not coming back. And you know, Spotify, as much as we want to say, oh well, you know, it's fine, everything worked out. No, it didn't.
But here's the thing. So, the Warriors and Celtics played on Friday, right? It was a nationally televised ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, tough break, to be honest.
But 150,000 people watched the 10-minute highlight, like full game highlight. So not just like...
Well, all of that was people watching it from embedded in my column off the game. I mean, obviously.
Sure, but newspaper people are still going to do that, right?
No, I know. But have you
seen... It's a natural distribution platform.
Have you seen what the NFL does for their one game highlight videos? Their 10-minute highlight videos?
No, but I'm not sure. I would be interested to know, but...
Yeah, they do like 1.5 minimum.
Yeah, that's fine. How many multiples of games are there NBA versus NFL?
No, you're right. You're right.
Probably
you're
like five.
But you're taking two of the top five brands in the league, or top five team brands in the league.
I think 50 grand watched the Nuggets Hawks, or the Nuggets Nets one.
That's exactly how many people watched it on TV, so that's great.
It was 766. So let's say that balloons up to 150, because I think it just went up like, you know, 18 hours ago or whatever.
Okay, not a long time. Well, not really. Most of those come in the immediate aftermath and in the morning, to be fair.
Let me look up the actual numbers, because I can do that. I have that at my disposal.
That is readily available on YouTube.com, the numbers of people who have watched things. Yeah.
So we want Warriors.
And that's lovely. Let's say you got, you know, seven, you know, let's just call it five for the sake of argument, five games every night. And let's just say every one of them's pulling an average of 100K. Okay. You're getting 100 or 500K worth of YouTube viewers a day.
It's probably something similar to that, right?
You know what that pulls in realistically with just YouTube ad revenue is $1,000.
Right.
Best case scenario. That's $1,000 for the NBA. Good luck, you know, paying Steph Curry. He gets paid, you know, $500,000 every game.
But what you do there is you need to sell on top of it.
Yeah, it's the TISO, you know, official highlights. And halfway through, you know, you stop the highlights for a commercial for Bud Light or something.
And you have a lower third on the bottom of it. Like 150,000 people watching a single thing. What you need to do is you need to be able to sell a Budweiser, et cetera, on the fact that this is valuable. This is where our viewers are going. Mm-hmm. The rate that you're paying at TV, you should move it to here. They're not going to pay that from the jump, obviously. It's just not.
Of course not. I think that's a good point.
You need to do, I think.
It's not going to make billions of dollars of revenue, though, Sam. Like, it isn't. The NBA could go in and get the exact same deal from ESPN and Turner today. if they wanted to just re-up at the exact same terms, ESPN and Turner would say, hell yeah. And I think the ESPN would, you know, stop some hemorrhaging. But the NBA owners, again, there's an expectation of percentage increase here. And their product just doesn't stand out at this juncture. I was saying this stuff, and a lot of people were not thrilled about it. That is to not lend validity or say that it's wrong. Like, but my argument is that for the last 9 years of the NBA, they have had a juggernaut team running the show. It was the Heatles, and then it became the Warriors.
Yeah, but people made this argument when Michael Jordan left too. Like, the numbers went down and they bounced back up, you know?
But there was a massive jump. LeBron, after the decision, massive jump. Viewership went up like 75% for national TV games.
Sure. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that the viewership being down is good here, but it's all cyclical. Like, I think, to an extent, I do think that we're going to see ratings continue to drop somewhat
there's just no question that stuff's going to keep dropping. You're just dealing with a smaller piece of the pie. So when maybe not percentage ratings, but even then, like, you're just not going to be able to compete against VOD and DVR when you don't have an elite product. And my argument is essentially you're dealing with two major revenue streams, right? You're dealing with TV partner broadcast revenue streams, and then you're also dealing with ticket sales and local. So there's local and there's the big. The big one brings in a shit ton of money. It brings in the majority of the money to the National Basketball Association. But for the local owners, it's that local revenue that they really, really care about. And that is why they need to have an adult conversation about the 82-game regular season. And we're not going to get into the load management thing. Is just a narrative argument.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be having the same conversation if it was being called, you know, injury prevention or whatever. But
I don't think that this is – I don't think the play has anything to do with it. I really don't.
I think it does. I think it does because of the same arguments I've heard time and time again for the last decade of my life, which is the regular season doesn't matter.
So there are a lot of, but like, those arguments have continued to happen.
But let me, here's the counter
all the time.
100%. No. Yeah, no. Listen, that's always been the argument. But here's what the NBA has had for the last 9 years that they don't have right now. They don't have appointment viewing. They don't have, the argument is always, what reason am I going to say on a Thursday night, let's go to a bar and watch this game? Or let me stay in and watch this game. Let me stop what I'm doing with my life on a Thursday to watch this game, or a Wednesday or a Friday, whatever it might be. But on a weeknight, because the NFL owns Sunday. And yes, they won. They got the best pick. They got the best pick of the day, but they dominated. People create their entire Sundays around watching the NFL in this country. Saturday, it is an increasingly scatterbrained product in college football, but people love football, and they have the entire day to watch college football. So they own Saturday, not as much as the NFL owns Sunday, but they own Saturday. Inferior product, but they're still number two in the ratings. The NBA doesn't own any days, and that's not to say that they have to, that we have to go to the Kevin Arnovitz Monday, but like, what reason, if you were to find out on the schedule, and I did this earlier today, like, you look at the schedule and you go Wednesday night, like, what reason? Oh man, like, Giannis has taken on the Blazers on Thursday night. Am I going to clear my schedule to go watch that? Like, no, because it doesn't feel like it means anything. I can watch the highlights later. It doesn't feel important. It doesn't feel monumental. And that's what you're competing up against when you have everything feels inconsequential and light and easily accessed. Why is it that I'm going to stop what I'm doing to watch this? Why would I go to a bar to watch this game the same way that I go to a bar to go watch the NFL on Sundays? And with the Warriors and the Heat, legitimately, I think people, because it was this unbelievable team and it was a super villainous situation with the Heat, people wanted to go see what the hell was going on. There was a morbid curiosity about them that lasted about 2-3 years, and then it started to fade, and then LeBron left again. And then with the Warriors, it took a while for that to catch on, but 2015, that 73-win season, they couldn't put them on national TV enough. The ratings were through the roof.
So I guess that, like, my question about all of this, though, is, like, does it really matter long term? Because, like, if you look at viewership,
it only matters up until 2024, 2025.
Yeah. So, like, if you look at it in terms of viewership of TV from younger people, right? So, viewers aged 18 to 34, Q3 in 2018 versus Q3 in 2017, TV ratings dropped 17.2% for people 18 to 34. Pulling up another one here. In general, if you look at the Radio and Television Business Report, the
that
age
seems like a reputable place.
Sure. The age of live sports viewers. The age of live sports viewers is just much older now. Like, it's continually aging up every single season.
As all things on classic mediums are.
So at the end of the day here, 7 years down the road, which is really what the NBA cares about, long term, the best thing that they can do is honestly just like hope for a small raise in terms of what they're getting paid on these distribution rights deals now.
What are you saying, 5-10%?
Sure. I don't really care what the number is. Honestly, I think it's a win for them if they keep it at the status quo. But
that's what I was saying. They would love to just say you want to re-up at this rate right now.
The owners won't like that, but like, I don't really think
how is that not an existential crisis? If you're not growing, you're dying.
Because what they are, they're growing the younger audience, and they're growing
that they can't monetize.
Increasingly time-shifted audience that nobody can monetize quite yet. But as the NFL continues to just skew older, like, younger people are watching the NFL less.
At some point... Luckily, the NFL has a built-in existential crisis in terms of that no one's going to be playing it in 10 years. So they got it covered from both ends. By the time they die, it will be a spectacular star imploding in on itself. The NBA is just trying to die with grace, I suppose.
Sure. Like, but again, at some point, someone is going to figure out how to monetize the internet.
Is it better to explode or to just die gracefully? I mean, this is an age-old question.
So if we're down to a stage where... See, at some point, we're going to hit the curve, right, where more people are watching and consuming content over streaming, over the internet, whatever you want to call it.
That curve, depending on how big of a scope you want to go to, they say that curve's already happened.
Right, but to the point where it is no longer financially viable for places like ESPN, TNT, et cetera, to shell out $8 billion on an NBA marketing or an NBA distribution deal, right? We're going to hit that point at some point.
So your argument is, I just want to clarify this, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just want to make sure I'm clear here. The NFL, which consistently grows its revenue by about $1 billion every year, if not more, is...
And the NBA is going to keep growing its revenue because they have other avenues where they're growing their revenue. They're growing their revenue internationally. They're growing their revenue in terms of just making money on the internet and figuring out more like how to do that every year. They're making more money on League Pass every year. Like, it's not like the NBA is not growing its revenue. It is. But it will continue to grow its revenue every year. I'm just like not real worried about if it's $500 million versus $1 billion this year.
I'm not crying tears for the NBA.
But it's like very clear that the NBA is playing the long game here and trying to figure out, okay, how do we deal with the fact that television networks are dire, like TV channels are dying, and
classic media is dying in the form. Yeah, people are just not going to get shit. If it's an information medium, if it's a broadcast medium, people are not going to get stuff from it anymore. I mean,
right. At some point, we're going to hit a point where ESPN is going to be like, yeah, we can't afford to shell out $8 billion for this TV deal. What the NBA, I think, is trying to do is it's trying to shore up all of its ancillary revenue streams now.
Which are?
It's trying to shore up the international route. It's trying to...
It's killing it in the international route right now. Jesus Christ. I mean, we just got done with China. We just got done with it being the main news story. That's still an issue.
Right, but like prior to Daryl Morey sending out a tweet...
They couldn't print money faster.
Right. Honestly, I don't think that's going to change. Like, I just don't think the Morey thing is going to even matter.
We have a fundamental disagreement there. I think it's going to have, I think it already has, and I think it will continue to have major ramifications.
I think in the short term it has.
You're not dealing with a widespread media. You're dealing with a totalitarian state.
Sure. I think in the short term it has, but at the end of the day, totalitarian states still like to print money hand over fist.
The totalitarian states aren't the ones. We do seem to forget that ultimately it's schmucks like us, not media members, I'm talking about just basketball fans, that actually provide the money as part of this. And if the state of China decides the fans don't get the NBA anymore, then that money no longer comes in.
Yeah, but they would have done that by now, I think, if they were.
They pretty much
have. No, they have just stopped the rockets from being shown. They have not really done anything, as far as I know, to stop the rest of the NBA.
All right, I need to do some further research on that. I haven't engaged in the topic in several weeks, and maybe I need to brush up.
Yeah, I think that like mostly we're through the Rubicon, other than Houston, which is a significant problem for Tillman Fertitta. But
yeah, well, he deserves some.
Yeah, I'm not going to really worry about Tillman.
It is just the Rockets' problem, that is the best case scenario for me as a person,
right?
Just in terms of my general day to day laughter for all of this.
So I think basically what the NBA is trying to do here is it's trying to stave off these TV ratings bubbles essentially for as long as they can. Like, I think that's the goal here. Ultimately, someone is going to figure out how to optimally, not even like full on monetize the internet, like monetizing it like TV channels have now. Someone's going to figure out how to make more money on the internet than what we
make now.
Let me
put it to you, like, no question. No question. At some point, someone will be clever. I just don't know that when there's one pipe coming in, and this is why sports have actually remained successful fiscally in this age, whereas most anything else on television has not, because you can target advertising. You're targeting advertising to that group we were talking about before, the 25 to 54 year old males who still spend a shit ton of money and in fact are one of the predominant driving
forces of the economy. There's a reason, like, it's the same reason Fox News
fucking murder, because they got old people.
But like, there's a reason also that like podcasting, like the podcasting quote unquote bubble still hasn't popped yet. It's because advertisers continue to make money off of podcasting, right? Like,
yeah, and there's very little overhead into creating a podcast.
Sure, correct.
So you only have to give advertising to the ones that are actually successful, like this one.
Correct. My point though is more that it's more about like the CPM number. It's more of a CPM argument than like a, you know, a success argument for podcasting, right? Like the CPM.
You have to take into account that the vast, vast majority, if not 99% of podcasts don't have any clicks. They have
right,
zero.
But those podcasts don't really matter for my argument. My argument is the NBA is always going to have a certain level of like viewership as it is.
100%. But when you enter the internet, essentially you are now fighting with all of those zeros. Like when you're on cable TV, you're only fighting with like 100 other things.
I don't really think the NBA is in this scenario, because people are basketball fans and they're going to target that.
They have built-in cachet, a significant amount, maybe more than anything else if they want. But they're entering a new boxing ring.
Right. And I don't know that it's any different that they're entering a new boxing ring for younger people, just because younger people, at the end of the day, know how to use, you know, Apple Plus or Netflix or whatever.
How do you think things are working out for DAZN?
Oh, God. I haven't even looked into DAZN. I see Chris Mannix's tweet videos. I have no idea.
It's not working out great. Let's put it that way. And they're going all in on Sunday Ticket because that's what they need. I mean, they put two YouTubers in a boxing match together, and that has been far and away their most successful thing. Meanwhile, they're paying Canelo Alvarez out the nose. I think they have Pacquiao on a deal as well, even though they have
Triple G too.
I mean, yeah. So they have great boxers, but 20 something bucks a month. I think it's $20.99 a month for
right. But boxing has been a dying sport for years now, and the NBA theoretically is thriving.
Correct. No. You're 100% right. But ultimately, boxing has been operating on an over-the-top model for decades, and it's a dying sport.
Yeah, it's fair. I don't really know that it's applicable here. I would need to think more about boxing. Like, I just don't think about boxing enough to like really be in. But like,
well,
for instance, like
boxing is you can still
the UFC is thriving. Like the UFC is thriving as a now over-the-top model that is very similar to boxing.
The UFC is thriving with ESPN's over-the-top model.
But they were thriving before that. Like, they're thriving to a greater extent now because of the ESPN over-the-top model. But
well, and as someone who worked at Fox when the UFC was still there, I can tell you that they leaned into that heavily because they felt like that was something that gave them. UFC did a wonderful job. I'm not taking anything away from UFC, and I'm certainly not alleging that Fox did anything significantly. But Fox decided that, okay, well, ESPN has they're going to use a lot more NFL rights. They buy them as part of that Monday Night Football package, which is why they still have Monday Night Football. They need the TV. They need the highlight rights for the rest of the week. Baseball, no one gives a shit about. Like, what we have cannot compete with ESPN. So what we're going to do is something unique. And ESPN's not talking about the UFC. There is a substantial and fanatical base there that the UFC has, in fact, built. We're going to piggyback on that. We're going to promote it further. Fox helped take the UFC to another level. It legitimized it in a lot of eyes. UFC continued to put out a really good product, tapping into that morbid curiosity that still allows the NFL to be so wildly successful, on top of the skill and strategy and the fact that it's a sport that can be played by peoples of all shapes and sizes, which is an undercurrent of its success. But Fox helped boost the UFC, then ESPN came in, and it's continuing to do it. But the NASCAR model applies to them as well. They'll still exist. There's still people who go to NASCAR tracks and stuff. But will it be able to make the same money if it decides, we don't need you, ESPN, we're going to go do our own thing?
Right.
We're
so the only reason I bring up the UFC, though, is because it runs a very similar model in terms of the way it makes money to boxing.
Except you can fight far more often with UFC.
Yes.
You fight like every 6 to 8 weeks as opposed to boxing where...
No, you don't.
Apparently.
No.
What's the turnaround?
You fight somewhere between 2 to 4 times a year, which is going to be...
Well, that's way more than boxing.
It
seems like it takes 8 years to box.
Right. It's going to be like 13 to 26 months for every fighter to like come back and recover. Like if you're Donald Cerrone, you're fighting, you know, 5 times a year because he's a psycho. But like if you're, you know, like there are fighters who take longer intervals.
Basically. What about like George Mastel, like the guy who's now the hot name right now?
So he did not fight at all in 2018. He took like a year off. And then I think he fought three or four times this year.
Okay. You can still count on it. It's still eventful, right? And I think this is maybe what we haven't been able to tap into because, listen, your arguments are good. We're talking more macro stuff. I had a lot of really good theories about how to save the NBA, but I guess it doesn't need saving. But like, it's still an event in the UFC.
Well, here, I would actually be really interested. Let's get off the UFC real quick. How would you save the NBA? Because I actually do... Like, I do think that there is a reason. Like, I do think the NBA is not, like, it's in a precarious spot. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I don't think it's in a bad spot. I just think
I don't think that it's imminent for a NASCAR demise at all. I think that it's going to be fine. I just don't think that they're going to be able to get in the money that maybe they want and that they're going to have to crack the code to be successful.
This is an issue of differing objectives and differing expectations as much as anything.
But I think that the main issue for the fans, as a fan of basketball first and foremost, I think the main issue has been the same issue for years, which is, and I won't get into the details again, which is that the regular season doesn't matter. And so why is it that I'm going to take my time to watch regular season games, to care about regular season games, unless I am seeing something truly revolutionary and spectacular, the way that I would argue the NBA has been able to...
For the same reason that people watch the Chicago TV shows on NBC. Like, I don't think you're going to see something spectacular. Yeah, it's true. That's a very fair point.
That's a very different argument. That's just NBC trying to get CBS
for the same reason that people channel. For the same reason that people watch Daybreak on Netflix, right? Like,
I do not know what that even is.
It's a like zombie TV show for high schools. Like high
school. Well, it's because Walking Dead was successful and people tuned in to watch The Walking Dead.
But my point nonetheless is, though, that it's not like in this era of massive consumption that everything is a hit all the time in terms of entertainment.
100%.
There's more good entertainment out there than ever, but it's not like everything that continues to get renewed and picked up and continues to run is this wildly unbelievable thing every week or every 40-minute episode.
No one's disagreeing. We're not talking about having to be the cream of the crop here, but I do think that there's an incongruity that we have going on, the juxtaposition of the fact that I think we're all in pretty much agreement here, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but hell, I'll do it. We all agree that the NBA's product, the actual basketball, has never been better. I mean, it is a fantastic game to watch on a nightly basis. I love watching
it. I think that young people would agree with that. I think
and
that
old people are going to complain about everything. That's all they do. That's why Fox News makes money hand over fist.
But again, that's not why. Again, like, I don't think the NBA is that worried about the older audience.
No, but my point, let's just talk about schmucks, you know, our age. Okay, so we're not talking, I don't know if we still qualify as super younger, you know, but like...
No, we're still, I'm 29, 30.
I'm 31.
Oh, wow. When did you hit 31?
You knew when my birthday was, Sam. It was in September.
That's right. I did know when your birthday was.
I've only said it out loud like 4 or 5 times. It's not as much fun as being 30. 30 still had the specter of youth attached to it. 31 is just like no man's land.
No, it's funny. I was talking to Laura about that. Laura was like, wow, you turned 30 this year. And I'm like, because Laura's 33. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'm already having like a crisis about it because I'm no longer going to be
person. Super meltdown. I didn't go on like a 10-day bender or anything, but like I was feeling some sort of way about 30, and eventually it doesn't matter.
That's what she said too.
I mean, it's just stunning how psyched out you get. And I guess what you really realize is how infrequently anyone asks how old you are. Right. At a certain juncture in life. And I think that happens like after 27, 28. People just either presume you're 22 or 40 at all points in between.
Right.
Like because I have a beautiful cherub face, I will always be presumed to be 22. So
yeah, you do look young. It's not really fair.
No, it isn't, because I have the oldest person temperament ever. Still, can I tell you my theory for how to at least make NBA games more regular season games to feel more eventful, more interesting, more meaningful?
Yes, but I want to pitch you on one reason why I think the ratings are also down as well. And then I'll let you finish on how to fix the NBA.
Okay, let's discredit all of the theories that lead to the big one. Yeah, let's go. I want to hear it. I do.
So I think that as NBA League Pass has grown, there are now more fans than ever that can basically decide, I can watch this national game, which features sometimes a good matchup, sometimes a bad matchup, or I can watch my team's game.
Right.
And because, you know, there are maybe...
Your team being, I mean, not local, you can't watch... If I'm in Oakland right now, like I can't watch either the Kings or the Warriors. The Kings thing is shitty, but
but you can watch those games anyway, right?
Right, because I buy YouTube TV for $50 a month, which then is paid out for TNT and ESPN.
Right, like you can watch those. You can watch your team in your own local market,
basically. And NBC Sports Bay Area. I mean, those are mainly the only things that you're actually paying significant amounts for. I mean, most channels cost less than a dollar.
Nonetheless, though, out of market.
You can watch the best basketball game you want on any given night. That's what you're saying.
It's like a big factor, even for general NBA fans. Like, it doesn't even have to be your team. Like, you can decide, all right, I can watch this bullshit, Nets Nuggets game, or I can watch Trae Young play, Luka Doncic in the Mavericks or something like that on any given
another argument for why the NBA needs to own a day, right? Like, so Wednesday night.
I guess, like, there is another question, though, that I have. Do we think it matters that I would venture on any singular given night more people are watching the NBA than ever before? They're just doing it in different places. Do we think there is an argument for the NBA trying to eventize a single game, like, for instance, the NFL does whenever... Mm-hmm. They do. I remember earlier this year, they basically cleared out the 4 o'clock slate and had one other game going up against Dallas and Green Bay, right? Do we think there's an argument that the NBA, which already sort of kind of does that, like on, for instance, Thursday nights, there are like 3 games typically. Uh-huh. I'd imagine that has something to do with TNT. Do we think that there is an argument for even going further than that?
I think that would be a very good way to at least
basically just say
to do a better job of promoting the product, because I do think that is a fundamental issue that the league has. Stuff is happening so frequently, and there are so many basketball games that are happening. It's really hard to look forward to them, right? Like the NFL, again, the NFL just lucked out in 99% of this. But like, we talk about what happened in the games for 2 days, and then we talk about what's happening next for 4 or 3. And like, that's a huge thing, because it gets you amped up. It makes you interested in what's going to happen. Whereas with the NBA, like, they don't even have time to practice, much less do we in the media have time to amp up a game. Like, the playoffs, it changes a little bit, right? But and even then it struggles, because it's happening so rapid fire. I think that's a good idea. One, maybe the NBA needs to concede Thursday nights, at least when the NFL season is happening, and just move to Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and try to own Friday night in a big way. I don't know if TNT is going to love it, but like maybe that is something to really think about going forward until the NFL decides they're going to take Friday night too.
There's probably a real case that the reason ESPN's ratings haven't gone down yet is because they do essentially own Friday night.
I've literally heard that argument, and I don't think that there is a counter argument to be made against that legitimately. Now we can also then take in the anecdotal stuff with all this, because at the same time, we're just talking about, you know, some shitty basketball games at the beginning of a season where the team that I believe has been propping up the NBA's ratings in a not insignificant way for 5 years is the worst team in the league, really, bar none. And at least, I think the Knicks could beat them. So you have that loss, and then you have kind of the hot new team on the street. You don't know who's going to play for them on any given night because both of their stars are in a constant state of injury and sitting out games, which, again, we're not going to get into the load management argument, but it does hurt the narrative of the league as like, oh man, I want to watch this game. Like, we've seen LeBron for 17 years. There's some curiosity as to how he works with Anthony Davis, but I think that it's not that I don't think that there's that much curiosity. There's nothing new and fresh about it because, again, we know who LeBron is. Like, no one on the earth is really known as well as LeBron James, the basketball player, is. We've only watched him for two decades of our life. There's nothing new and fresh and interesting really happening in the league right now, at least that they've been able to really capitalize on and push as a narrative that gets people excited. So then you have to kind of go down to the lower levels, which is, okay, we don't have a star, we don't have a supernova, we don't have something that's going to naturally grab eyeballs. And you know, maybe that will come down the line. Maybe Zion pulls that off, whatever. I don't know. But in the meantime, what can we do to maximize the attention?
Having said that, by the way, Lakers ratings this year are pretty up.
Yeah, but remember when they had to change the entire schedule to help make that happen?
Yes, fair.
I mean, and I think that the Davis thing is there. Yes, the Lakers' ratings are up. Are they probably as up as maybe some people want them to be? No, I don't know. Everything's expectations versus reality. And at a certain point, we're just going to acknowledge, like, okay, LeBron and Anthony Davis are extremely good. Who are they playing? You know, like, we no longer need to see if they're going to work. They're two incredible players, and they are working in an exceptional level, as predicted. But, like, who are they playing? What is the thing? That game with Luka the other night, I'm sure that did big ratings, or at least, you know, really solid ratings, because that was something interesting and new. There's not that many of those games on the schedule. No one wants to watch the fucking Nuggets. Sorry. You know, the Nets with Kyrie are not interesting, mainly because they seem to have gotten away from their intrinsic Netsness, which was a lot more fun and entertaining to watch. Like, the Warriors aren't there to help anybody. The Celtics are, Kemba Walker doesn't draw eyeballs. Like, they're in a bit of a rut. That's not going to be permanent. Something new will happen. But I do think that they can take this time and reevaluate some of the ways that they handle the day-to-day. They can look into some of the minutiae that they've been able to overlook for years. And I think one of those things is trying to dominate a day of the week. If you want to take it a step further, I mean, the correct answer, I think, into creating a better regular season product is to, you know, cut down on the dilution of the regular season product. I think that is universally believed to, you know, be the best option, but I also think it's the least likely option because there are so many teams that rely on 41 home games worth of revenue to break even if they can even do that in a year.
Strongly disagree with that. I just don't think that the NBA's product is really at fault here at all.
The NBA's product meaning?
Like, I don't think that there are too many games. I don't think that there are. Look, I think there are probably too many games for the health of athletes now, just in terms of, like, keeping them healthy long term. But, like, I don't think that the fact that there are too many games is hindering ratings.
Let me ask you this, Sam. I mean, what is stopping the NBA from going the route of the NHL and Major League Baseball, two other macro season sports?
In regard to
just becoming an extremely tribalistic, localized thing?
I think that it's a good question. Is the NBA heading that way? Are all professional sports just heading that way?
Well, except for the NFL, which is getting older and will eventually die.
Yeah, I even think the NFL is heading that way a little bit. Like, ESPN, I think that honestly it's probably ESPN is keeping the national consciousness as relevant as it is with the NBA and NFL.
So you better make sure they want to pay you a lot of money the next go around, because again, that's the NASCAR argument. I I think that the NBA can make some. The problem is any change that the NBA makes is an aggressive change. I think that things that we think in tech, just theoretically, that don't seem that big, right? Like 20 fewer regular season games isn't a big deal at all to the fans. No one would care, but to owners, it's everything. So
yeah, so therefore, it's always going to stay.
Correct, but it only matters what the narrative out there is, and the narrative is from the fans, and the fans are the ones who drive the money. And for years, they've been saying that the regular season is too long. People love the NBA playoffs just like people love the NHL playoffs, but no one's watching regular season NHL games. No one gives a shit because they don't feel like they're consequential. And even the NFL with 16 and soon 17 games, it feels like every game is in some way consequential. I've covered a lot of inconsequential football games, but the slogan is apt. Any given Sunday, something can happen.
Are you going to give me a pitch to like change the structure of the playoffs or something?
You know I am.
Oh, are you really?
I absolutely am.
Okay,
Are you ready for it? Full baseball version of the playoffs.
So division winners get in?
Yep.
Two wild cards, so five teams make the playoffs in each division?
And the wild cards play a one-game playoff.
Have the wild cards play a full series, but sure.
No, because then that's way too much of a break for the other teams.
Shit, that's right.
I'll give you three. I'll give you three games. They get a week.
Huh.
And the advantage of being the number one seed is that now you get to play a team that's like got no rest.
Owners will never go for this either.
You know what? I honestly think that you can make a compelling pitch towards this one because you're not making it towards the 30 team owner saying we're taking away, 10 gate revenues for you. We're only going to take away a maximum of 4 gate revenues for like 4 teams. Now, or you can view it as, as like 6.5 teams because we're getting rid of 4 teams in the playoffs. And so, the seeds 5 through 8 won't get that, gate revenue and stuff. But like the other argument you're making is you're not really making that much national TV money off of the first round. That first round is still on local television. Now, maybe that's something that
making a shit ton off of attendance and gate.
Yeah, no question. But by increasing the necessity or at least the significance of the regular season for some teams in a very big way, you could argue that you have a few more quasi playoff games in the regular season as opposed to a bunch of people just waiting for the playoffs because sub 500 teams are making the postseason. You'll just wait until then.
That's true.
In which case the sub 500 team's only going to get 2 games anyway because they're getting swept.
The Minnesota Denver game in 2018 at the end of the year, that was super fun,
right? And you'll probably get like a week or so of those because now you're not fighting out for seeding, you're actually fighting out for a playoff spot. No one gives a shit about seeding, including the teams these days, by the way, which is why the Clippers are capable of doing what they're doing, which I don't disagree with. I think it's smart to do, but they don't give a shit if they're the 6th seed or not,
Yeah, and if they're in the same conference or division as the Lakers, you basically have to finish in the top 4 to feel comfortable.
How fucking fun would a baseball season that was 81 or 82 games with the current playoff structure be?
That's actually, I'm not going to say it's a really good idea because, fuck you, but that's actually it's a pretty good idea. Because, I don't even think it would really affect...
It wouldn't affect 16 teams a year.
Well, here's the thing. So there have been studies in across all professional sports, and very clearly the NBA is the one where the best team wins most often. So it's not like you're really even hindering the chances at a title for the teams that finish 6, 7, and 8 in the Eastern and Western conferences.
Yeah. And then, if you want to, you can create some sort of, you make Summer League a bigger deal. You turn it into a Europa League situation where, only the teams, I don't know. Now I'm just spitballing.
I actually like this a lot. I hate you. Fuck you.
I just think, one, you're going to get that one game playoff, right?
They would have to do some slight divisional realigning.
And I think you would have to change the schedule in a significant way. I think you would need 6 or maybe 8 games against divisional opponents, which means you get rid of the home and home, which people are going to argue against because you just can't. You need to lean more into conference, which I think there's value. Everyone says they should get rid of conference and that's not there. Like, the Warriors and the Rockets are legitimate rivals, and that's because they played every year in the playoffs. And you can't get that kind of, you know, clash. You can't get that kind of familiarity if you're now spreading it out, you know.
Man, so if you're at 82 games...
I'm giving you the 82. That's the other thing, too. This doesn't get rid of the 82, which I think, honestly, the easiest way for the fans, you just say, oh, get rid of regular season games. We don't care. But that doesn't work for the owners. So it's a lost cause. So what can we do now? You're going to have to take a haircut somewhere, owners. Would you rather take it in the regular season where everyone loses money, or would you rather take it in the playoffs where only the teams that make the playoffs lose a little bit of money? And I guess the teams that would normally get, you know, a couple of games worth of gate revenue, they're going to lose money too. But all the more reason. I think it weeds out the basketball's middle class, which is a much trickier spot to be in. I think it's going to weed out cheap teams left and right. Basketball's model is really built well for parity in the way that baseball really isn't, and less so than the NFL. But in a way where there's accountability, like you have to do something to earn it. Whereas in the NFL, you can kind of just stumble into it. I mean, even the Browns were supposed to be good this year. So it's just a thought. I mean, you're getting rid of, again, games. You got mid-afternoon games on NBA TV. Like, if that's not fat we can trim, what the fuck is?
I actually like this.
I'm good for one every now and again.
This is a good one. This is a really good one because it helps the product in a way that... Again, like, I don't really think the NBA's product needs help, and I think the Players Association would absolutely turn this down because it would result in all of their guys playing 82 games.
I think it spices shit up. Maybe that's all you need.
It definitely does.
You know what? We're just things haven't been that. Hey, you're living with someone for a while. You just need to spice things up a little bit, and I think this does it a good way. And listen, this isn't to say.
Sometimes you gotta spice things up, like, you know, scheduling a wedding in Scotland.
I know that was non-negotiable. That has been the total spice our entire life. It's just not even a thing. She was trying to convince me the other day that because the Warriors suck, and I'm probably just not going to go to that Warriors Rockets game on Christmas, which of course was the plan a month ago, which is like, hey, that's a big deal. Like, I got to be here for that for work. Also, I don't want to go somewhere cold. She's like, well, if we have like 4 or 5 days between, you know, Niners games and Raiders games, maybe we just go to Scotland. And it's like, what? I mean, that's just the pratfall of... dating a Scottish girl, but
you just come on down to LA. You hang out in the apartment with me. This is the dream.
We're fine. Listen, man, there's nothing better. Like, legitimately, like, I love my parents. They're coming for Thanksgiving. We have Heather's family in all the time. I go see Heather's family every July. Like, we love our families. Don't get me wrong, but it is nice to not have the extracurricular bullshit on the big holidays. Like Thanksgiving, yeah,
like we're going to our friend's place. Like, typically, yeah, we have like a big Thanksgiving, in 2018 turned into shit show party.
As they always do.
Or no, that was 2017. Last year's was like, you know, a normal day.
We canceled Thanksgiving because of the 2017 shit show party.
The 2017 Thanksgiving party, like you were the last people at my apartment, at my wedding. It was similar to that.
That's saying something.
Like, it was a lot at the 2017 Thanksgiving party. 2018 was more reserved, and 2019 is involving us going to our friend's place instead. So
yeah, like, there, I don't know how we got on this point, but spice. Yeah, I am for staying in California during holidays at pretty much all cost. And like, my parents, like my siblings live out on the East Coast now. You know, my sister's engaged. His family is over on the East Coast. My brother is above reproach in pretty much all things and kind of lives his own life and is, you know, jet setting around the world because he has that availability afforded to him. So it's just like, yeah, you come to California. I'm not flying to Chicago for a meal. Like, I'm just not doing that. And Christmas, like, yeah, that would be great and all, but we've done it like 30 times. Like, I'm pretty much familiar with you people by now.
we fixed the NBA. Fixed family gatherings. You know,
I'm on a roll.
This is where Dieter Kurtenbach is in his life.
Let me put it to you this way, though, with the final point I want to make on the spicing things up. Like, right now, the reason that there is at least out there in the ether an argument about load management and Kawhi Leonard and all this stuff, even though it is minuscule in scope and I think ultimately justified and strong practice. The reason that it is resonating is because people are adamant, and they're right, that it just doesn't fucking matter. That this is basically a fuck you, and that they've figured out that they've cut the bullshit, and they're just saying the regular season doesn't matter. We can play this guy a third, half, three quarters of the time, and we'll be fine. And they're right. That it's 100% correct. We don't need them until the playoffs. That's the only season that matters. I've been around a team that openly admitted it for three straight years. Nothing mattered. We're tired. We don't want to play hard in the regular season. We're going to phone it in. Every now and again, we'll do something ridiculous and spectacular just to keep your appetite wet, just to keep bringing you back. But we just don't give a shit until the playoffs, and then we're actually going to start trying. Now you have this load management thing, and it's the same sort of thing. If you still played 82 games, but you had this playoff model, we'd be having a different conversation about Kawhi's injury and load management. And maybe that is a negative, right? Maybe that is some collateral damage. But people would be talking about it more as a detriment to their playoff chances than anything else. Because right now, there's like a nihilistic undertone to all of it. Yeah, it sucks. It's not great for the fans and you know, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, it doesn't matter because it's all playing for the playoffs. If the regular season meant more for playing for the playoffs for all teams, not just, you know, the three or four teams at the bottom of the bracket.
It is kind of a natural content creator.
100%. In the NFL, there's six playoff spots for 32 teams. Even the teams that are wildly successful, it feels like that you're always on the razor's edge. Baseball's issue is that they have too many fucking games. But, you know, the end of the season, people are fighting for stuff, and you're going for that one-game playoff. You really want to win your division. Now, their issue is that their league model is not built for parity because people have been overthinking it for years. And people don't try to win in baseball. They deliberately try to lose so that they can perhaps win down the line, and that's a bad model. Basketball, as much as we can point out, you know, with lottery reform and such, like I just think that it would be extremely punitive to teams if they tried to do the same. Hockey has the exact same issue as the NBA.
Hockey might be the tanking like god that doesn't get talked about enough.
It's true. Well, that's because their draft is basically there's the top five picks, and then you might as well throw a dart.
Yeah, like pick value in hockey is
precipitously drops off after picks.
Like. Even more than, well, the NBA, like the top pick in the NBA is probably the most valuable.
Massive.
And then hockey. But the thing with like the NBA is,
you can get away with, in the NBA, you can legitimately, one, you have immediate return on the draft pick value.
You do in the NHL, exactly at number one, you do too.
At number one, yeah. No, what I'm saying is, like, one, and it's different because, you know, let's be honest, as much as we talk about the NHL not being relevant in the U.S., it is the number one, bar none, sport in Canada. Now, that's 30 million people, so that's like L.A., L.A. and the extended counties. So, you know, what are we really talking about here? But in the NHL, you have guys who, you know, are some of them, especially after the top couple of picks, you got guys who are just going to go spend a couple of years in minors. Like the baseball draft. Like, you don't have that guy slotted onto your team immediately. Whereas in the NBA, you got two rounds, and if 90% of them, 85% of them, they're on the team immediately, and you can see what they're about. And honestly, you know, the lottery is going to provide you names. So in Canada, they might know these guys from major, junior, but in the NBA, there's enough college basketball that's consumed in this country, which, by the way, they have probably a proper number of games. There's enough college basketball consumed in this country and so much conversation about it that and the draft, which, you know, you're very helpful in, obviously, that people know the names. So you're getting names that are recognizable even deep into the first round.
The NHL has gotten pretty good at, like, especially in Canada, like,
huge.
Most people know who the first rounders are, like,
yeah. I read hockey news every couple weeks. Like, I know it's really good. At the same time, they usually have one or two guys. It's kind of like the NBA, except it doesn't feel like it packs as much of a punch in that middle class of the first round, where like 5 through 20 in the NBA draft, those feel like important picks in the NHL.
It is in part due to the marketing apparatus of college basketball. It's true.
100%. I think that's 100% true. And you're just dealing with more conversation about it. Maybe that's something that falls off, or maybe that gets increased even more. But nevertheless, with lottery reform and the way that it's happening, which, by the way, Warriors fans are starting to get upset about. I mean, they can empathize with Knicks fans because apparently they have the same franchise these days. But with lottery reform, like, you can't go full tank. It's not as much of a benefit to you. Now you're also creating a scarcity in a minor, but still nevertheless a scarcity in playoff spots. So where does that leave some teams? You kind of got to shit or, you know, get off the pot. And I think that that's going to be a good spot for plenty of teams that kind of have resided in the middle for a while. If that's the collateral damage, if there's some collateral damage to be found there, so be it. Like, I'm not going to argue that we should keep in a system that rewards mediocrity to whatever degree.
So basically where we're at here, the NBA, it has issues. I do think it has, like, a monetization problem. I don't really think it's a viewership problem. Like, I think it's a monetization problem more than anything.
Yeah. I don't know if we're in full agreement, because I think that viewership and monetization are very closely tied together, more so than you.
The NBA will try and keep the status quo as long as possible. How much of a disaster it is if it's, you know, basically the same deal? I don't think it's that big of a deal. You think it's a pretty major deal?
I think that the NBA owners would have a pretty hard time accepting that when they see what the NFL owners are doing. You got to remember, these guys feel like they're in a special fraternity all together, and they didn't buy an NBA team by being poor.
And generally, I think the NBA is trying to position itself as the league of the future by putting more of its eggs in the basket of appeasing younger viewers as opposed to appeasing older viewers. And ultimately finding a way to monetize those younger viewers is going to be the hardest part of all of this. And that's going to be the problem that within the next 10 years, the NBA is going to have to solve.
No question at all. That is 100% true. And we came up with no solutions for that, but we did come up with the best possible solution for what you deemed a phantom problem.
Yeah. I'm just in on that idea. Like, I do think it would actually help a little bit.
I think it would just make shit a little more.
I don't think it's a problem, but I think that would help it nonetheless.
It can't hurt.
Yeah.
Well, it can, but not to any degree where the benefits would not weigh the detriments.
Yeah. I don't think it would. I don't think it would end up hindering.
Awesome. That's even better.
We did well. We did well on this podcast.
We got 30 minutes, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to go to the gym, then I realized that there's another deal at 4:30 that I can do.
I'm sorry that these takes were so hot.
Yeah. Since I'm stuck here for another hour, do you want to talk about movies?
Sure.
What? You went to see The Irishman this weekend.
God bless America. That was long.
Too long? I still have not seen it. I am up to how many movies have I seen?
Here's the thing.
I'm up to 84 2019 releases I've seen this year. The Irishman is not one of them.
I would recommend that you don't go see it in a theater, just on the basic principle of it's 3.5 hours long.
Based on the basic principle of urine?
Yeah, pretty much. And my love of Coke Zero. It's not bad. I'm not in any way alleging it's bad. I don't think it's some masterpiece or anything. It's good. I thought it was interesting. It was funny. There was some good guys getting shot, you know, good scenes where guys got shot in the head. That's always enjoyable entertainment. It was extremely Scorsese without anything where you felt like you were watching a great movie. And it dragged on. Probably could have been. Listen, I'll give him the length. He was trying to tell a big arcing story. It was probably two movies. I don't know where you cut it so that it becomes movie one, movie two. It was a big honker. I don't really see a lot of places where you could cut it outside of maybe wrapping it up a little bit at the end. So it could have been probably half an hour shorter. It's still a 3-hour movie. That's still a mega honker. So, it wasn't, I don't know if it was good enough to justify more than 2 hours, really, unless you're super into cinema, you know, and luckily I am. I felt better walking out of that movie than I did walking out of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
Another honker.
Not that big. It's like 2.5.
It was, but that's still pretty fucking long.
Oh, man. It is. Like I bitch about movies being 2 hours long sometimes.
Yeah.
Like it just depends on how much story you have.
Yeah. And frankly, I thought that the story was far more cohesive and linear. It was a straight linear story in The Irishman. I mean, we start at the beginning and we work our way up. And, you know, rich characters and all that stuff. It doesn't matter that it's pretty much the exact same characters from every other Scorsese movie outside of The Departed. It's a Scorsese mobster movie. Like, the fuck do you expect? Again, it's not some masterpiece. And, you know, as much as I didn't really like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I can at least appreciate the sort of masturbatory nature of Tarantino's filmmaking. Like, he knows what he's about and he's going to push it to an probably past the acceptable limit. Whereas Scorsese, I don't think, really thinks on those same terms. So there was never really any moments that felt deeply compelling or captivating or grand. It was just, kind of a long book.
Which movie did you think was more cinematic? Avengers or The Irishman?
Is Marty listening? Is that
this is the ultimate troll question. Do not answer it.
I'll answer it. How about this?
There's no way to answer this question. There, movies can be whatever people want them to be. Like, it's fine to enjoy. Like,
let me put
the
it.
Avengers.
I,
the Avengers say, can be cinematic.
I didn't necessarily like. I'm not Marvel or DC guy here. I go see him, but like, as I've said before on the podcast, like the first Avengers, I had to keep leaning over to Heather and being like, who is that? I didn't know any of them outside of like the main characters. Like, I saw Ant-Man. Like, I guess that provided me some context, but like, I didn't know all of the Captain America backstory and like all that shit. And they were still good. And I still, you know, walked out going like, well, you know, better ways to waste my time. Scorsese going on though about maybe like Avengers being like, oh, it's just, you know, CGI bullshit, this and that. Like, he fucking age reversed Robert De Niro for like 2 hours in this movie. Like, don't be getting on me about like cinema versus computers and crap, which I know wasn't his point, but like had to have been some sort of the undercurrent of it, which is one of them's done on a green screen and the other one is, you know, actually acted out in a real world on a set, you know, kind of classic old stuff. When you're fucking like age reversing Robert De Niro, which by the way, like barely worked. Like, Robert De Niro's old as shit now. And so they age reverse him. And it's like, you're telling me he's like supposed to be like 20, 25, but he looks 50. Like, you can't age reverse someone that much without.
So I haven't seen it, but from what I know, it's like, he's supposed to be like 50, right?
No, he was supposed to be like 30 something.
Really? Okay. That's not great.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that they've had multiple things, but it's like, how much can the Snapchat filter fix this? Like, at a certain point, it just becomes airbrushed. And we've gone past the uncanny valley or whatever. It was fine. It was fine. I again would recommend. It's not a movie that had any value in seeing on the big screen. Let's put it that way.
Interesting. Okay.
I thought. Yeah, I'll tell you who I thought was really. Pacino was like really good in it.
He's the one that's getting like legitimate awards push. So.
I wouldn't give it to him, but he was good in it. Like he stole the show in every scene. I don't know much about Jimmy Hoffa in general, so I appreciated that aspect as well. Like, this is a real person. I know that he was supposed to, you know, he was important. Like, I didn't know any of that stuff, even though I'd like to think that I read plenty. I knew some of it, but like nothing of detail. So this was, you know, that was an interesting, rich kind of a faux history that we had going on. And, you know, that shit I get a kick out of. So the middle part of the movie actually was really good. Beginning and the end, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I'm going in like kind of expecting to think it's just fine. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I think that you'll come out maybe even pleasantly surprised.
Okay. I watched The Farewell yesterday.
Oh, I just rented it.
Oh, God.
Oh,
are you watching it with Heather?
No. I watch my artsy fartsy films by myself because she doesn't like them.
It's not really artsy fartsy. It's
A24. I mean, there's a certain line. I know my audience in that regard, and this ain't her jam.
Yeah, like, I mean, I like straight up cried like throughout like parts of it.
Oh, it's okay.
I will say that. If you're going to watch it soon, like, oh, yeah, straight up. Like, part of it, too, is, like, I just lost my grandmother, too.
Yeah, but like, no, that matters.
Yeah, but, like...
Ooh, yeah. I don't know if we should... Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was...
I cry a lot. For a larger man, I'm very sensitive. And so I'm fucked. If you went, I'm gone. Yeah. There's just no way that's... And I don't have great relationships with my grandparents, so... Yeah. I can only imagine what's going to happen.
Laura and I watched The King last night.
What's The King? Is that the Timothy Chalamet?
Yes.
How's that?
I did not really like it that much. Like, okay. I gave it like a C+.
I watched the previews. I watched the previews and I go like, And then I showed them to Heather and she was just like, nah. Like, so, that looks dark and boring.
Timothy Chalamet is pretty good.
Is he playing Timothy Chalamet?
No, he's not, actually.
He plays Timothy Chalamet in a lot of movies, and I'm not the biggest fan of that.
They gave Robert Pattinson a role as this French prince.
Yes.
And it is spectacular.
In a good way?
Oh, they let him, like, create this goofy French accent and do this, like, very physical performance that involves him sitting down a lot, yet still being simultaneously physical. It is...
Okay.
Off the rails performance in the best possible way. Like, it's not like Academy Award worthy or anything, but like, okay. It is awesome.
Cinema.
It's like hilarious and really good. It's like meant to be funny.
Interesting. All right. Something to keep in mind.
Yeah, we did Angel Has Fallen this weekend.
I'm not gonna watch it.
It's fine.
I take it that was in the theater or was that just on DVR?
It just came out on Amazon Prime, so we just rented.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
What else? Peanut Butter Falcon, that was enjoyable.
I haven't even heard of it. Well, no, I think I have heard of it. What is that?
Shia LaBeouf goes on. It's like a road trip movie.
It's Shia LaBeouf and the guy with Down syndrome.
Yes.
Is it good?
It's very good. It's very enjoyable. It's not like I think it like might
sometimes,
be the...
Sometimes those get set up where you're like, oh, this might be just like a really fun buddy movie. And then it turns out to be not a buddy movie. It got very dark.
No, it's like somewhere in my... It's like probably like my 25th best 2019 release so far.
Do you publish these, by the way? Do you just have like a running list that we can all...
I have access? A running list like privately.
Yeah, take on that my shit. Thing. Take that shit online, baby.
I will at the end of the year. I want to, or once I hit 100, maybe, because I'm 16 away from 100.
And you'll get there. But my point is more to the effect of, like, allow people to know what it is that is good so that they can get on it now. I'm speaking for myself pretty much exclusively. I'm sure I could just
tell
you
what's good anyway. Yeah.
I know at the same time, you know, it'd just be great if I didn't have to actually contact you for this information.
Oh, man. My movie rankings are hilarious, by the way.
What is number one on the list right now?
Parasite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked about that real fast.
John Wick 3 is number two.
Oh, okay.
Booksmart is number three. Like,
I liked Booksmart. I liked Booksmart.
Very distinctly different movies. Like, I really go for a lot of different stuff. My list will be very different than I would imagine any other movie list that gets released every year. Like, because people try and go like all, you know, artsy with movie lists. And
You're not trying to impress anybody here. You're just telling them like it is.
I want to enjoy a movie. Like, I want to sit down and enjoy a movie. Like,
and this isn't, it's just like sports. Listen, I
have Endgame
really
at number
well
six
executed.
Right now. Like, I enjoyed Endgame.
Did they execute what they were trying to execute well? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Like,
how could that be a bad movie then?
The most hilarious, I have Endgame at six and The Lighthouse at seven right now.
Oh, I kind of want to, I suppose based on its rating, The Lighthouse is worth it, but that looks interesting.
It's very interesting. Again, I'm like, this is what I was about to say. I think that like what I've discovered over the last basically like year and a half, I think Robert Pattinson's like legit one of the most interesting actors. Like, this
He's a great actor.
Not an exaggeration, not a joke, I genuinely believe he is fascinating in every role that he
did takes. You see High Life?
No, I haven't yet.
It's bad.
Yeah, Laura saw it and said it was fine. I'll watch it at some point, but I just
it is
yet.
It's something. I mean, listen, it certainly does not dispute your argument that you just made.
And part of it is like he just does a lot of interesting shit. Like
he doesn't give a fuck. Like it's somewhat beautiful, and it's actually going to be kind of sad. Him being like Batman.
Because, I love it. Like it kind of fills within it though. Like it's true.
I think he's going to be a good Batman. As much as ever,
I think he's going to be amazing.
People are kind of shitting on that. I'm just like, you guys would have shit on Christian Bale as Batman too, and Christian Bale is a good Batman. I think Pattinson would be an elite Batman.
Yeah, like go watch The Lighthouse and tell me that that guy who is that good at acting, or go watch Good Time, or go watch like any other movie that he's like Cosmopolis. He's really good in that.
He's an outstanding actor, and he pushes boundaries, and you know he's not playing Robert Pattinson.
No, he never plays Robert Pattinson. That's what's really interesting.
Yeah, I actually felt like a little bit in High Life there wasn't it was to the point where the character development there was probably like too nuanced, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was very verbal. In having to explain why this was not Robert Pattinson, if that makes any sense. And it was like, yeah, no, I understand the scenario here. Like, you're in space, there's a baby. We're going to do some flashbacks. But, like, I don't know, you're still Robert Pattinson. Whereas in kind of any other movie, it's like, oh, that is not the guy who was in Twilight.
Yeah. Trying to think, did I see anything else? I watched like 7 or 8 movies this weekend because Laura was sick and I took 2 days like totally away from basketball. Like, did not watch a single basketball being dribbled.
Let me tell you really miss so much.
Like I more than anything, I just found that like while I was trying to write these prospect things that like my brain was just malfunctioning and I needed a break. Like I just needed to like reset my brain. So
I think it's a noble thing to do. And well, I think you're entitled.
Honestly, I think it's just like a mental health thing to do. Like you just need to like do it.
I would like to note that you are entitled to 2 days off a week under the current schedule of how people work.
It's funny. I called my editor, Sergio, and he was like, are you calling me to ask if you can take off 2 days? I was like, yes. I guess.
That's how I feel most of the time with my job. Like, by the way, I'm going to actually like take days. And it's like, like you're entitled to those.
You're allowed to. He was like, no, like you should do that. Please do that. Like, you should not be doing this every week. And I was like, okay, thank you.
I mean, you work 7 days a week normally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In some regard, like on Saturdays, I'll wake up, watch a couple games, write a little bit. Sundays, like Laura sleeps in till 9:30 most days, Sundays. And I'm at the point now where I can't really sleep in past 7. So
That sounds so sad.
Yeah, I can't. No.
I
would say 4 weeks I've woken up at least at 7:30.
Would you say you're a morning person or a night person?
I would say I'm turning more into a morning person. I used to be a night person. I'm not really there anymore.
Define night person as you understood it for yourself.
I'm up until like midnight most nights. Like I'm not.
Okay, that doesn't even come close to qualifying as a night person, sir.
No, I know. I'm not
gatekeeper-ish here, but like, come on.
No, but like I used to be up until like 3 a.m. most.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, like that's. Yeah.
Well, like Laura goes to bed at, you know, typically 11 o'clock, and then I'll stay up and, you know, watch something for an hour and then go.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only time I can ever get anything done.
Like, yeah, it's hard.
I've been hosting radio from 10 to midnight, and people are like, oh, that time slot must suck. And it's just like, no, that's pretty much the only time my brain ever operates correctly. So long as I'm properly caffeinated, like, I'll come back and write after that. Like I've gotten so accustomed to writing after Warriors games for the morning that I'll start stuff at midnight and write until 3. The other day I just stayed up until 6 a.m. I like didn't even know why.
That's a mistake.
I just listened to Steely Dan for like 3 straight hours. It was weird.
That's a mistake.
It certainly was. But then I slept in a little bit yesterday because I didn't have to be at the Niners game until 1. Yesterday being Sunday, the Niners game until 1. So I slept in until like. You know, I went to bed at like 10:30. I woke up at 10:30.
Yeah, no, great. Like on Friday night, we went to a friend's like birthday party. By the way, I went to a house party on Friday night for the first time in years. And
just like people having a party at their house.
Yeah.
Like back in the good old days.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty great.
There was no like pretense or dinner or anything.
It was no. There's no pretense. They like barbecued things like while we were there.
Mm.
It was awesome.
Does like, that qualify as a
there
barbecue?
Was like a keg in the backyard. There was. Like a,
I kind of want to have a house party now. I don't know if I have enough friends.
Like you have a house, do it.
I really don't know if I have enough friends.
Welcome to my life. I make that joke with Laura all the time. She's like, no, I don't think that's right, really.
I mean, I guess I could. Fuck, I went to a house party. Jesus, was that a calendar year ago?
Yeah, like, no, I just go to bars.
It was in the summer.
Yeah. Like, I just go to bars and meet people. Like,
the other thing, too, is, like, we live on the island. Like, we're not in the city. We have a lot of friends who live down by San Jose. We have a lot of friends who live in the city. I have some friends that live in Oakland, but, like, nobody lives on the island with us. And that's because, you know, we were able to get a house here, and it was the long-term play. Like, we're, you know, hoping to have kids and stuff down the line. And the schools here are great and stuff. And, like, once, if you have an opportunity to buy a house in the Bay Area, like, you can't really just do it for 3 or 4 years. Like, you gotta go all in.
Yeah.
So we just did the 10-year play, and plus we're old and washed anyway. So, like, we're like, this is great. Everything's walkable.
Isn't Heather, like, 27?
No, Heather's turning 30.
Oh, is she? Okay.
No, she already turned 30.
Okay. There we go. I feel better.
She's 19.
Wait, Heather is older than me?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You would never know by her temperament. I feel like this podcast just turned into Heather slander. She's going to be angry.
Yes, I'm sure.
She's been in New York for 10 days. I'm just remembering all the reasons I like her and dislike her.
No, I think that for some reason, I think we had this conversation. And I think I just am misremembering. It has nothing to do with, like, me thinking she acts older or
younger. Let me put it to you this way. We both get extremely carded.
Oh yeah, when we went to the bar up, like, what, I was up there a year ago. Yeah. When we went to that bar in the Bay, like, she 100% got carded. You didn't. Tall enough, because you, like, you just are huge. So
I'm,
like,
tall. Yeah, I'm tall. They're just like, well, he's clearly had a few, so yeah. I wouldn't be the first to serve him. I think that's more of the pickup. There's never been a circumstance where we have both sat down at a bar and neither of us have gotten carded.
It's bizarre. It's very bizarre.
That is not bizarre. Like, how is that bizarre? Like, that's normal practice. Why would you say that that's bizarre? Why are you making
You're
us
talking
weird?
To someone that has, like, a long beard right now and has been growing a beard basically from the time he was 12 years old.
That's true. I'm trying to grow a beard right now.
That's not going to go well.
I think it's going better than you think.
Really?
I think it is. I think that there's a chance I can pull this off. I don't think it's a great chance, but there's like a
I can imagine you having, like, the Sidney Crosby issue of beards.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. I think that it's filling in a little bit better than it usually does. Like, I feel like at age 31, I might be able to finally grow a facial.
Oh my God.
I feel like we're close. I feel like we're close. Now, mind you, this is going to take some convincing, once Heather does get back from New York, later on this week, because she's not going to care for it at all. But I realized the only reason I was shaving was because I went to the Niners game yesterday. Like, I didn't look out of place. Like, I honestly, it looked fine. Like, it just looks like a normal, and you can do it in November because everyone's doing the Movember thing, and it's like, you know, if I have to pay money to give this a try, I guess I will. But, like, you know, I'm not going with a full mustache. Like, it's bad enough I got a small enough mouth as is. Ironically, of course, that my mouth is physically small. But I think it's happening. I think it's going to be okay, at least until I'm told that, you know, I have to leave the house. Yeah. You know, that wedding in Scotland? I'm going alone.
Yeah, really?
But one, out of pure laziness, and then two, out of some sort of deep, morbid desire.
Peter.
I'm seeing if it happens. And you know what? I'll just... you won't do a website, but maybe I will.
Tell the people where they can find your work.
I'm on Twitter at Dieter, D-I-E-T-E-R. And then I bought a website the other day. I've had DieterKurtenbach.com forever, but that's a lot of words, and people don't know how to spell it. So if you actually want to find all my work, you ready for this? Sam, are you ready for this?
I am.
Dieter.news.
Dieter.news. I'm Googling. I'm hitting this right now.
It should forward,
it just forwards you to the Mercury News site. Whatever.
Yeah, and I'm going to build it out once I get, you know, stuff. I'm building it out. Cut me some slack. It does forward to the Mercury News site as is, but, like, I thought that was a pretty clever move, sir. Cut me some slack.
I'm in on that. There you go. I'm
okay. So that's where you can find me. You've been asking for years, and now I have a much more direct manner in which to do that, as opposed to just, you know, figure it out on your own, lazy fuckers.
Yeah. No, this is good. Go to Dieter.news.
Yeah. I was trying to get, like, diet.er, but, like, I guess Etheria doesn't have its own extension. Like, I was trying to get really clever with it. We'll see. I'm just buying URLs lately. It's kind of a fun, weird thing to do.
go to The Athletic. Just keep me employed. That's all I got. Like, what is happening right now?
Chaos. Just sheer chaos.
Yeah. Ricky O'Donnell was on the first half of this podcast. Go follow Ricky at SBN underscore Ricky.
Yay, Ricky.
Follow me, Sam underscore Vicini. I don't know. We'll be back at some point this week. We'll talk about prospects. We'll talk some bullshit. I don't know, man. Like, this is...
After this, I don't know really how you come back.
Well, I was planning on being out of here at 3, and here we are at 4. It's been an extra hour of podcast.
Again, when the takes are this hot, you just can't get out of the kitchen.
I hate you so much.
You should. You really should.
This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please leave us ratings and reviews. We'll start reading those again whenever I podcast later this week. You guys have done an excellent job building those out. I really appreciate it on iTunes specifically. It really does help get the word out about the podcast more. Until next time, though, we will talk soon. Bye.